A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Thought about starting the show today by reading out the Declaration of Independence just to switch things up a little bit, since we are heading into our birthday weekend, 250 years of freedom and liberty, and the uneven road, I think, to a more perfect union. But one, I think that, again, we have made genuine progress since 1776. I think there is a lot to celebrate. Obviously, this is not a perfect country. There are still plenty of things to work on, but I can think of no other place on earth that I would rather live than right here in the United States of America. And so I thought, what better way to celebrate the Independence Day holiday than by welcoming in a foreigner? Topher Field lives in Australia. He is a libertarian filmmaker. He is an author. He is a pundit. Mark Walters from Armed American Radio reached out to me a couple weeks ago and said, hey, you know, I just had Topher on the program. You got to get him on your show. He's absolutely fantastic. And I trust what Mark has to say. So I said, okay, reached out to Topher. We had a couple of email conversations. It really was a great conversation, not only about what has been lost in Australia in terms of gun ownership, but, you know, contrasting that with our efforts to preserve and strengthen and secure our right to keep and bear arms. But there's even some positive news from down under, which, frankly, I was not expecting to hear from Topher. And it speaks to, you know, years ago, when I first started doing Bearing Arms, Cam and Company, I came up with the phrase self-defense is a human right. And I am pleased to see that that has been, you know, widely adopted throughout the Second Amendment community. And it's true. You know, the right to keep and bear arms is a right that's found in our Constitution. I believe it's a natural right, but I believe that it is also directly connected to that natural right of self-defense. And even in a country like Australia, where gun ownership is not legally banned, but I think it's fair to say it is culturally frowned upon, where the idea of using a firearm in self-defense is essentially unheard of, when somebody does act to protect themselves, to protect their loved ones, the reaction is, heck yeah, good for them. We see this here in the United States, too. I mean, even in anti-gun regimes like California, when there's an armed citizen story, when a, you know, mom is able to protect herself and her kids from a home invader, and the local news goes out and they talk to neighbors, I've never once heard a neighbor, even in the most anti-gun locale, say, well, what was she doing with a gun anyway? No, I'm glad she was able to protect herself. I'm glad that this guy got what was coming to him. We understand, I think, again, at a very fundamental level, regardless of what our surface politics may be, regardless of how we identify ourselves in terms of political leanings or political parties, the vast majority of us understand the importance of self-defense, and again, the inherent nature of self-defense. And when we see somebody act to protect themselves and their loved ones, that instinct within us is to say, good. And that's something that I think the anti-gunners would like to take away from us. You know, Drew Stevenson is a law professor down in Texas. He responded on Blue Sky this week to the news that the Supreme Court was taking up a gun ban case next term, an assault weapon case, quote unquote. And he said, you know, we need to change the culture. We need to, you know, get people to think it's not okay to buy these things. And ultimately, that's what the gun control movement really is about. Do they want to pass a bunch of laws that will essentially wipe away our right to keep and bear arms? Yes. But why do they want to do that? Because they don't want us to own guns. If they could do that culturally, they could have the same impact. Where on paper, sure, you can own a gun, but culturally it's so taboo that nobody does, they'd be fine with that. It's really not about the law. It's about controlling we the people, right? The law is the easiest way to do that because we are stubborn and we have an independent streak. But the law is just a means to an end. The end is disarmament. The end is a de-evolution to the point that when we hear about somebody protecting themselves or their children from a break-in, that our first response is not good. They want our first response to be, oh, how horrible. Not how horrible that this happened. Not how horrible that somebody broke in. How horrible it was that this person lashed out at this misunderstood creature who might just be looking for sustenance or food. We don't know what trauma they might have suffered in their childhood that led them to, you know, smash that window and climb in. That's what they want. Now, I happen to believe that we can help the less fortunate. I believe that we can love our neighbor. And we can protect ourselves and our loved ones. And if my neighbor decides to break through my bedroom window and crawl in through the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, listen, I'm going to love my family more. I'm going to love myself more. And I'm going to protect and defend them with everything that I have. So, having said that, let's kick off the conversation with Topher Field. A great conversation. I really appreciate him being on the program. Take a look and a listen. Topher, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's really good talking with you, sir.
Well, it's absolutely my pleasure to be here.
You know, when Mark Walters said reached out to me and said, you need to have this guy in your program, I listened to Mark. He is a trusted friend. And honestly, you know, I think as we're heading into the 250th birthday of the United States of America, it is kind of good to get the perspective of a freedom-loving individual who lives in a country that, frankly, I believe is far less free than we are. So I appreciate you joining us.
Well, look, you're absolutely right. There's no argument for me that America is actually still the freest country that really we've ever seen. It's the greatest experiment in freedom that we've ever seen. But that also means that freedom is more important in America than it is anywhere else. You can take it for granted even less, because if you guys lose or give away or don't keep what it is that you've been given, there probably will never be another experiment in freedom like yours.
I think that's accurate. And, you know, this is liberties are something that need to be safeguarded. And when it comes particularly to our right to keep and bear arms, we're not only trying to, you know, keep these freedoms in place, but we're trying to claw back those freedoms that have been lost either at the state level or, you know, through things like the Gun Control Act, the National Firearms Act. Mm-hmm. You know, tell me, I mean, if we can, let's go back to Australia.
Sure.
A little bit more than 30 years ago, you had the gun buyback, quote unquote, the compensated confiscation program. I have friends who lived in Australia at the time who, you know, when they talk about it, I mean, they would break down in tears, telling me about the heirlooms that they had to hand over to the government.
Guns
that had been passed down from generation to generation that they were no longer allowed to own. Here we are 30 years later. From what I understand, the number of guns in Australia has actually grown larger than what it was at the time of the buyback. And the gun control activists are not happy about this. They're also not happy about gun owners regaining some political power, I understand. Mm-hmm. Over. Mm-hmm. I saw a big piece a couple of weeks ago about the state of Victoria, I believe it was. And sure. I think it was the Labor Socialists actually have a faction that is very a pro-gun owner.
Yeah.
And this is cause for alarm among the political establishment in Australia. Is that right?
Look, I've got to say, things are getting fun in Australia. I've been a political commentator since 2009. So I've been doing this for 17 years. And I have said all this all the way through. I've said apathy is our enemy. And until Australians throw off their apathy, nothing's going to get better. I didn't actually believe that I would see that day come when we started to throw that apathy in the bin and get active. But honestly, it's actually happening, and it's really crystal clear over the last year especially. So let me fill you in on a couple of things. Firstly, we now have 4 million legally owned firearms in Australia, which we're only a population of about 27 or so million, including children, et cetera. So our population is somewhere in between Texas and Florida. But our land mass is roughly the same size as the continental United States, so ignoring Alaska and ignoring Hawaii, et cetera. So we're a very sparsely populated country by comparison. We have 4 million legally owned guns. And on top of that, according to official figures, there are 1 million illegal guns in Australia. And so to suggest that we are some sort of a gun-free paradise, that we don't have gun crime, is absurd. Just two nights ago, we had breaking news story out of Sydney, Australia, that 30 shots were fired into a home while people were sleeping inside that home. Just almost every single day, and certainly multiple times every single week, there is another news story that breaks with gun-related violent crime. And of course, these aren't the lawful gun owners that are doing these sorts of things. These are the 1 million illegally held guns in this country. Now, if you can't keep illegal guns out of an island nation that is relatively wealthy and relatively low corruption, if under those circumstances they still have a problem with 1 million illegal guns in the country, then I'm sorry, but gun control is a fantasy. There's an amazing thing that just happened I want to share with you and your listeners just the other week that led to, for the first time in my life, positive press coverage of a defensive gun use in Australia.
I heard about this story. This even made headlines here in the United States.
Yeah, it's truly the fact that it happened at all. So the odds are so unlikely, because in Australia, a lawful gun owner who is storing their gun lawfully has to lock up the gun, lock up the ammunition separately, and remove the firing pin if they can. And they all have to be under lock and key. So what happened in this case, you can look it up. It was Keith and Di Blessing. That was their names in New South Wales in Australia. An armed man kicked his way into their home, stabbed both of them. Keith was actually wounded very, very severely. He ended up in intensive care for days. So these were not superficial injuries. Then, due to Keith's actions, the attacker actually left and gave them respite for a few minutes, and then came back, presumably to finish the job, presumably realized, hang on, I've left witnesses alive. I better go back and finish these guys off. It was that respite that allowed Di, Keith's wife, to actually get the gun and the ammunition out of the safe. And when the attacker started kicking his way back through another door, that's when Keith opened fire and protected his wife and saved his own life, almost certainly. Now, that's a remarkable chain of events. The odds of a victim being able to actually get and use a firearm in a defensive capacity in Australia are so remote, because you need that gap. Yeah. They have to use deadly force on you first before you're allowed to go and get your gun in the first place. And then you have to live long enough to get your gun and use it. It's an extraordinarily unlikely thing, but it happened. And what's truly telling is that the chief of police came out and called him a hero. The media called him a hero, and the state governor, we call him a premier, the state premier of New South Wales, called him a hero. I've never seen this in Australia before. And when you combine that with the fact that we are in the grip of one of the worst violent crime waves that our country has ever had, and combine that with the fact that more and more people are now sick and tired of being made defenseless in the face of armed criminals, I do believe that we're going to see a shift. And certainly what part of why I'm even on your show is because it's time for the myth of the gun-free paradise of Australia to die once and for all. It was never true, and it is certainly not true today.
You know, and when you hear these politicians call this armed citizen a hero.
Yeah.
Are they, how many people are making that leap? Like, okay, so this guy's a hero.
Yeah, it's pretty much universal.
Most people can't act that way because the laws prevent them from defending themselves and their families. Do you think that this will actually lead to a push to, not overturn every gun law in Australia. Let's just start, allowing firearms to be stored in a way that they can be used for self-defense.
Yeah. So there's two separate issues. One is castle law. So at the moment in Australia, you have on the books the right to protect yourself. But the way that's been interpreted in the courts in practice is you have to wait until they have actively tried to kill you. Just the fact that they have a knife and they're brandishing it and they're threatening you and they're saying they're going to kill you, that's not enough. You have to
after breaking into your home.
I know. But under law, the way our laws are applied in Australia, until they've actually tried to strike you with that weapon, you can't be sure what their actual intentions are. That's how it's been interpreted. And so what we have on the first hand is just the idea of self-defense. If someone is kicking their way through the door of my house, can I simply use whatever is available, or do I have to wait for them to hurt me first? Because at the moment, you have to wait. So castle law, there's a big push on in multiple states in Australia to have castle law introduced. Now, that won't relate to firearms specifically, but it will mean that I could put a baseball bat, you know, by beside my bed and not get in trouble. At the moment, if someone kicks their way through a door and I grab a weapon, let's say a baseball bat, and I use that on the attacker, in court, the police are likely to charge me with assaulting the person who kicked his way into my home. And the judge is going to want to know, why did you have a baseball bat there? Because if you put it there for the purpose of using it for self-defense, then your actions become premeditated. And if you hurt that person, it gets upgraded to intentional crimes rather than self-defense type crimes. So our entire world is upside down. The way that I explain it in Australia, and I'm an ardently pro-gun Australian. There's not many of us, but there are some, to the point that I actually agree that the NFA in the US is actually an infringement on your Second Amendment rights. I think that's pretty clear. So in Australia, there are very few people advocating for gun rights, let alone self-defensive gun use. But what we're seeing in Australia now is a situation where we have armed gangs, multiple gangs, multiple members kicking their way through a door, armed with machetes and sometimes with guns. And they're deliberately targeting homes when they know the homeowner will be there. It used to be when I was a kid that they would try and break into the home when they thought no one was home. Now they're doing it when they know someone's home on purpose because they want the car keys. They want to be able to intimidate you into giving up your valuables. Instead of stealing cars when they're abandoned in a car park, they're now stealing cars when the mum is getting into or out of the car with her kids because, again, they can get the keys. They target the human being. And they're doing this because they know that we are made defenseless. So the argument that I've now been making for years and is finally beginning to get some traction is that what we have in practice in Australia, forget the intentions. In practice, what we have is a government-run protection racket where violent criminals are protected from being harmed by their victims. Victims are actively disarmed by the government and by the police for the protection of violent criminals, and it's the victims who have to pay for it through our taxes and, of course, pay for it again as the victims of crime. That message is beginning to get through. So I think we're going to see castle law in some Australian states within the next 3 to 5 years, definitely. And then off the back of that, we're going to begin to see some genuine reforms on the gun front. And I think that's going to be a slower process, 3 to 10 years. But what I will say is there is no tolerance in the Australian public anymore for any additional gun restrictions to what we already have. That line has been drawn pretty clearly in the wake of the Bondi massacre.
And we saw that. I mean, in the wake of the Bondi massacre, there were, you know, what, about half the states said, no, we're not going to cooperate with
correct.
The government's buyback.
Correct. Correct. Now, can I tie that in with what you said before? So in Victoria, we have a left socialist government. That's my former home city where I got locked down during COVID and kind of made my name through that period of time. Jacinta Allen is her name. Now, they are beholden. The Labour socialist government is beholden to the Labour unions. And the Labour unions include a lot of people who love hunting, love duck hunting, love their guns, love their shooting. And so we have this really weird situation where in every other respect, Victoria is kind of the California of Australia, the most progressive state, the most bankrupt state. But on this one issue of guns, the government actually can't afford to upset the hunters or the gun owners.
Interesting. I mean, well, again, you know, there is political power, you know, and when governments band together, that political power can actually change things. And you know, hopefully that continues to grow beyond Victoria. And I hope that you're right that maybe even on Australia, you guys can claw back some freedom. I'm curious. I mean, you know, how much time do you spend here in the United States?
So this is my 8th trip to the US, but this is only the second time since all the COVID madness kicked off. I'm here for 9 weeks this time on a speaking tour, including Freedom Fest and a bunch of other venues. But I do hope to be coming back every year from now on.
You know, when you see the just how normal gun ownership is in the United States, do you feel like we take this for granted?
Certainly some Americans do. I'm heartened by people like yourself and people like Mark and others that really do stand their ground and really do make a big fuss about it. It is so important. Throughout history, we've seen time and again that gun confiscation is one of the pathways towards genuine tyranny. And you know, when you look at the statistics of democide, the fact that roughly 300 million people were killed by their own government in the 1900s alone, from the year 1900 to the year 2000, you know, this was facilitated by the fact that the people were disarmed. Imagine the situation in Iran right now. If the ordinary people of Iran, the ones that, you know, the tens of thousands that were out there protesting, what if they were not disarmed? The only reason those protests were put down and tens of thousands of people were killed is because they didn't have access to any sort of weaponry. So whilst I do not want to see a civil war happen, I don't want to see people getting shot, the fact that the public have the capacity changes everything about the relationship. It changes everything about how the government can approach you. And I think it changes it for the better. So I'm certainly in the never give up your guns camp.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, I think it is a preventative tool protection against the formation of tyranny. You know, and I recall it's been probably 15 years or more now, but when Darfur was in the headlines, there was, this was basically internecine. It wasn't even internecine warfare. It was a genocide. And there was an NGO, you know, someone from one of these humanitarian groups who, you know, tried to explain why it would be bad for the people who were being slaughtered to have arms. It's just, well, you know, I mean, that could create a civil war, you know, that could create conflict. And I was just left scratching my head that, you know, listen, civil war is bad. You're right. Genocide's worse. I mean, what you're saying, 100%, it's better to 100%. Have an unarmed group slaughtered than for that group to have the ability to fight back. And I can't get my head around that.
Many years ago, I interviewed a statistician by the name of Davey Barker. This was the beginning of my journey down in this direction. He's just a statistician. He wasn't at the time, I haven't talked to him in a decade. He wasn't at the time a gun owner, but he looked into the statistics of mass shootings. And instead of using the FBI's definition, which is a loaded definition, he simply found every shooting where someone intended to commit a mass shooting, where it was their intent to go out and take lots of lives randomly, not targeted, not people known to him, not family violence, just an attempted mass shooting. And the reason why he did it that way is because the FBI set a floor of, I think, four people had to die in order for it to be considered a mass shooting. And what he had realized as a statistician is that there was an enormous number of would-be mass shooters who were stopped by civilians with civilian-owned firearms before it got to that threshold. So as far as the FBI was concerned, there was some negligible number of shootings that were stopped by civilians with guns. Oh, no, it rarely ever happens. But what was unsaid was someone has to have killed four people and then be stopped. But what actually happens is if they're going to get stopped by a civilian with a gun, the average death toll was only about 2 to 2.5. And if the mass shooting continued until the police arrived, then the average death toll was something like 12 or 13. And that was what he actually found looking into the mass shooting side of things, which is that is essentially a microcosm of a genocide versus a civil war. What stops an attempted genocide inside your local shopping center is someone shooting back, someone turning it into a two-way shooting range, turning it into a civil war or a war of a criminal versus a good guy with a gun in that case. But that is a microcosm of the same thing at a country level that you're talking about.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a brilliant way of looking at it. You know, I mean, what is your message to Americans as we celebrate, you know, our 250th anniversary this coming weekend? You know, coming from your perspective as an Australian, where you were, I think, you know, as an individual, just as liberty minded as I am. But living in a society that is much more oppressive to individual liberty and freedom. What would you share with Americans?
So my question for Americans is, well, firstly, congratulations on 250 years. But be honest with yourself for a second. If nothing changes, if the country keeps going the way it is, will there be a 500th? And so far, I haven't had anyone say yes. Now, not a birthday for the United States of America. I mean, where it is still the land of the free. And what I believe is going on in America right now, I sum it up in this simple phrase. There is too much 1984 and there is not enough 1776. What has happened in America today is that you have a government that the King of England would have been jealous of back when you signed the Declaration of Independence. He would have loved to have had this level of surveillance, this amount of standing army in the form of police and sheriff's departments and everything else, let alone the military itself. This amount of the ability to freely violate the rights that are enumerated in your Constitution, and particularly the first 10 amendments to your Constitution, but they are all violated. I mean, the First Amendment is defended only at great cost. It is violated successfully against people who don't have the money to defend themselves. The Second Amendment is violated by the NFA, not to mention a bunch of other state laws. The Fourth Amendment against warrantless search and seizure, I mean, that is just violated all over the country all of the time, let alone the Tenth Amendment, that all the powers not given to the federal government are reserved to the states. Your Bill of Rights, I'm sorry, it's a dead letter unless you're willing to actually get on your feet and defend it. And so this is my thesis, and this is what I talk about in my books, Good People Break Bad Laws, and the second book, Good Christians Break Bad Laws. If we believe in limited government, the only thing that has actually worked over history to limit the power of government is the people being quick to reach the limit of their obedience. So you and I would say we believe in limited government, right? But if there isn't a point where you or I would actually say no, and we would disobey ourselves at an individual level, then the truth is we're only paying lip service to limited government. If you believe in limited government, you have to believe that there is a point where you will stop obeying. Now, I lived that during COVID. That was what happened. Melbourne City, Australia became the most locked down city in the world. We had armored cars on the street. We had people being shot with rubber bullets. We had mass arrests happening, house arrest and curfews and military checkpoints around the city that you couldn't pass through. It was a really, really terrible time. And for us, it went on for over 18 months. And I was on the front line of that. I was one of the first public speakers. Or in fact, I was the only public figure for a while to speak out against that. I was there from the very beginning of the protest movement all the way through to the end, when the Victoria Police finally stopped their violence and stood down and refused to continue carrying out the government's orders. And that's where I learned about the reality of civil disobedience in the modern age. I saw it firsthand. I lived it. And that's where my books come from. That's where my documentary comes from. And my message for Americans is this. You as a society, as a culture, need to recapture the spirit of 1776. You need to recapture the spirit of saying, no, you don't have the right to do that. And instead of grumbling about it, I'm going to actually stop you. Now, I'm advocating for peaceful civil disobedience. I'm advocating for using the processes and the laws and the courts, etc. But obviously, if that fails, and let's not forget, your founding fathers spent 11 years doing petitions and a bunch of other things before they got to rebellion. And that process is essential, or else your rebellion is not legitimate. It's just petulance. It's just you throwing a tantrum. You have to go through that process. And legitimate civil disobedience is a really important part of that process. It's one that I don't believe we are using nearly enough in any Western country. And for me, I want to see America recapture the spirit of 1776 in the form of widespread civil disobedience coming from the grassroots. And not just in, we associate civil disobedience with progressive politics. No, conservatives should also be sitting there going, and let alone libertarians, sitting there saying, no, government, you were not authorized to do that, to make that decision, to impose that fine, to whatever it is, or school boards or HOAs or city. It doesn't have to be the federal government. At all levels, any power that is being misapplied, we have an obligation to stand up to that. And as Americans, if you can do that, then I believe you can get your country back, and there will be a 500th. But if that doesn't happen, then I'm concerned there won't even be a 300th.
Honestly, your answer opens up a whole bunch of other questions I'd love to ask you, but I know we're running out of time. So I'll have to ask you, will you come back at some point? Because I'd love to get your thoughts on the surveillance state. I've heard say, well, the only reason the only reason the Supreme Court's taken up a gun ban case now is because the government has drones that could kill us. Suggesting that, small arms have become superfluous. I will tell you, though, I mean, I live in Virginia, where as of yesterday, assault firearms and large capacity magazines are now illegal. Yeah. We've had almost 20 Virginia versions of district attorneys or prosecutors come out and say, I'm not going to enforce this law. We have had, I think, more than a dozen sheriffs come out and say, I'm not going to enforce this law.
Fantastic.
Well over 100,000 assault firearms sold in the state of Virginia this year. Virginians say, hey, you know what? You can ban these guns, but I'm going to keep owning them. So I think that the spirit of civil disobedience and even civic disobedience, right, where you have political subdivisions saying, no, my duty is to the Constitution, not to these laws that violate constitutional rights. We are seeing that certainly where I live, and I think that spirit of freedom is going to continue to grow across the country. Topher, again, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us today. Really appreciate it. If folks want to find out more, if they want to read your books, how do they get
sure. Topherfield.com is where you'll find everything, including my documentary. You can watch that for free at the documentary tab, and at Topherfield is all my socials. For Americans, if you want to buy my books, it's probably best to do it from Amazon. So there's Good People Break Bad Laws is my first best-selling book, and Good Christians Break Bad Laws. That's about the theology of civil disobedience. Both are available on Amazon. And can I finish with this comment? If you have people who are practicing that civic disobedience that you talked about, that subsidiarity and saying, no, I'm not going to enforce unjust laws, can you get behind them in the most practical and tangible possible way, please, wherever you are in the US and whoever those people are? I know from experience, being one of the people who spoke out against my government during COVID, how phenomenally lonely that can become very, very quickly. So can you please, if you have those people in your community and in your life, can you please just make it your business to get to know them and find out how you can support them and make sure that they're not standing alone?
Absolutely. Topher, fantastic advice. Enjoy Independence Day here in the United States of America. And again, we'd love to touch base with you in the future, whether it's here in the U.S. or when you're back in Australia.
I'd be happy to come back on. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, sir. Topher Field joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks once again to Topher, and looking forward to doing another interview with him in the very near future. Right now, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Texas. Suspect wanted on probation violation prior to murder of woman in League City, arrest warrant shows. This is a guy who, according to authorities, targeted his ex, basically. Isaiah Johnson is his name. Turned himself into police just hours after Joanna Walton was shot and killed on Monday. And again, he had an outstanding arrest warrant. That warrant had been outstanding for almost a year. But it was never served, according to court records, because that's what happens with warrants. It's not like a BOLO alert goes out. Police everywhere around League City or Houston start looking for Isaiah Watkins or Isaiah Johnson because, man, we got to take him into custody. Now, if they catch him speeding, they catch him committing another crime, officers make contact with Isaiah Johnson, they'll know, oh, look, he's got a warrant. They'll take him into custody. But as long as he's able to escape attention, he's walking free. And here's the thing. He shouldn't have been on probation. He shouldn't have had a warrant issued because he should have been behind bars. The relationship between Walton and Johnson had been violent for years, according to Walton's family. In 2023, 3 years ago, police said that Johnson pleaded guilty to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon after he allegedly tried to shoot Walton. The gun jammed, and so he beat her with the pistol instead. He was given 30 days in jail and 10 years probation. A month in jail for trying to shoot his girlfriend, the mother of his child. 30 days in jail. 10 years probation, right? Now, Mr. Johnson, you stay on the straight and narrow. We're going to arrest you and take you back to prison if we catch you. If we catch you. So after that 30 days was served, and we don't know if he actually did the full 30 days, probably got credit for time served while he was awaiting trial. It may have really been like, all right, you've already done your 30 days. You're free to go, Mr. Johnson. While he's on probation, about 2 years later, August of 2025, police say that Johnson broke into Walton's apartment, which is when police issued that arrest warrant for burglary. The warrant wasn't served until Johnson turned himself in on Monday on the murder charge. According to ABC 13 in Houston, Johnson's probation was originally issued by a judge in League City. It was transferred to Harris County. But Harris County, It says that their community supervision and corrections department told ABC 13 that they never received the arrest warrant for the burglary. So even if Johnson had been regularly checking in with his probation officer, and it's unclear whether or not that happened, he would not have been picked up. Because apparently the Galveston County DA never informed Harris County that Johnson was wanted for breaking into his ex's apartment after he got 30 days in jail and 10 years probation for trying to kill her. And I love this. ABC 13 says, we went to the Galveston County DA's office, which filed that arrest warrant. When asked if they ever notified Harris County of Johnson's warrant, they said, no comment. Really? I've got some comments about that, but this is family friendly, so I'll let you just imagine what those comments might be. You know, we know police have no duty to protect us as individuals. And sadly, we know that when DA's office, when prosecutors screw up, when they forget to file the paperwork, oh, I just got lost in, you know, caught in the, slipped through the cracks here. We know that there's no accountability. We know that nothing's going to happen to anybody in that office. Nobody's going to get fired. Nobody's going to get suspended. Nobody's going to get criminally charged. And this just reinforces the fact that our safety, our protection is our responsibility. It's not up to the police department. It's not up to the DA. Because when they ignore our cries for help, when they fail to do their job, there's no repercussions. Nothing falls on them. Falls on us. So, and I don't say this to be anti-police. I don't say this to be anti-prosecutor. I firmly believe in a criminal justice system. I wish ours functioned better than it did. I'm not an anarchist. I'm a realist. And realistically, depending on the police and prosecutors to keep you safe from harm, it's a bad idea. And in this case, unfortunately, a woman is dead because the criminal justice system failed her. Not only with the sentence, but even ensuring that Mr. Johnson abided by the terms of his probation and failing to hold him accountable when he did not do that. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. Huntsville, Alabama. Investigators say early morning shooting in Huntsville appears to be self-defense. No charges are expected. Don't have a whole lot of information about this one. Happened about 3 o'clock in the morning on July 1st. Officers responded to a report of a shooting at a home on Salem Drive. When officers arrived, they found a man suffering from gunshot wounds. He was taken to a local hospital. Last report in critical condition. Police say the investigation found that the injured man had entered the home unlawfully while armed with a firearm. The Madison County DA's office says that the shooting appears to have been an act of self-defense. They say that the investigation remains ongoing and no charges are anticipated against the resident who fired the weapon. The injured man, however, remains under investigation for possible first-degree burglary charges. So, don't know if this was just a random encounter. Don't know if the suspect and the resident knew each other beforehand. Don't know. But we do know that the resident was armed. The resident was able to protect themselves. And the guy who went into a home where he was not supposed to be while armed with a gun is recovering in the hospital and hopefully will soon be taken into custody and transferred to the jail there in Huntsville, Alabama. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in New York who helped save a mom and 2 children from a burning car after a crash in Ontario County. This from WROC in Rochester. Crash happened Wednesday, about 3:45 in the afternoon. Deputies say 911 callers reported a rollover crash with multiple people inside. As first responders were headed there to the scene, they learned that at least one vehicle had caught fire. According to the Ontario County Sheriff's Office, a 40-year-old woman was driving northbound in a Nissan Pathfinder. She had two kids with her, 6 years old, 8 months old. When her vehicle swerved into the oncoming lane and hit a southbound pickup truck head-on. The pickup was being driven by a 71-year-old man, Brian Johnson. His wife was riding with him. Their two dogs were there. They were towing a big camper. There was a third driver involved in this accident who was heading south behind the Johnsons in his SUV. He could not stop in time. He ends up crashing into the back of the camper. So the impact then pushes the woman's SUV backwards. It overturns. It catches fire. And deputies say that's when the third driver got out of his own vehicle, despite the fact that he was injured, and was able to pull the woman and the two children to safety. Another motorist who saw what was going on stopped, helped get Johnson's wife from the pickup that had been hit head on. According to authorities, both the Pathfinder and the pickup eventually engulfed in flames. The two dogs perished in the crash, as did the 71-year-old driver of that pickup, Brian Johnson. His wife was flown to a hospital where she was listed at last report in critical condition in the ICU. The two children, the woman who swerved into the other lane was taken by a life flight, and the last report was in critical condition. Her two children suffered minor injuries and are expected to be okay. Johnson's wife, broken leg, but is also expected to make a full physical recovery. Emotionally and mentally, that's going to take longer than a few weeks to heal up. Authorities haven't said what caused the woman to swerve into the other lane and into oncoming traffic. And I won't speculate. It is a terrible situation all around. But the Good Samaritan, again, who was the third victim, essentially, in this accident. The presence of mind, despite his injuries, to get out, to approach that vehicle on fire, to rescue and extricate the woman who was critically injured and her two children. I mean, again, that is just that is an act of heroism. It's not a matter of, you know, sometimes I say, a lot of times I say, in the right place at the right time. I imagine this guy would have preferred to be anywhere but that place at that time. But despite that, he's still able to do the right thing. And we thank him for his very, very good deed. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program. I hope you have a fantastic Independence Day weekend. It peeves me. I won't say it drives me crazy, but it peeves me when I hear people say, hey, happy 4th of July. You know, 4th of July is just a day. July 4th is just a day on a calendar. It's Independence Day. That's what we're celebrating. We're not celebrating the fact that it's the 4th of July. John Adams thought we'd be celebrating on the 3rd of July, but he didn't. It was Independence Day. That's what we would be celebrating. That's what we will be celebrating. So happy Independence Day to you. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. I am planning on taking a couple of days off next week. It's going to be kind of a working vacation. I still need to edit the video with ATF Director Robert Sakata and Chief Counsel Rob Leiter. So I'm hoping that we can share that at the very latest by Wednesday, if not before then. But like I said, it's going to take some time to put that together. So I'm going to spare myself some writing duties and work on that early part of next week. But I'll be back with more Bearing Arms Cam & Company next Wednesday. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com, though, between now and then. We're going to keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. We've got a full slate for you tomorrow as we head into the holiday weekend. And then Tom Knighton will be picking up the slack for me on Monday and Tuesday of next week. Again, I hope that you have a fantastic Independence Day weekend. Hope you do something fun, whatever it is. I know some people are not into fireworks. Some people really are. I sure wish it wasn't going to be 105 degrees in Central Virginia. I am planning on going out and seeing some fireworks. I am also planning on being somewhat miserable. But that's all right. Just weather-wise. I've been waiting for this Independence Day since I was a kid. I was 2 years old when we had the bicentennial, and I missed out. So, I mean, just as a little kid, I remember thinking, what was the 250th anniversary going to be like? So, you know what? I'm going to do it upright. At least I'm going to try to do it upright, and I hope that you do as well. So happy Independence Day. We'll see you back here soon. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.